Game On on 2FM.
With Green Firm, healthy snacking made easy with Green Firm's high protein on the go range. Available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.
Thanks to Tara Stewart, who I have to say is an absolutely fantastic substitute. She's so good, Donica. We don't even call them substitutes anymore. She's a finisher. It's Thursday the 29th of October and this is Game On.
Coming up today, my first class second row partner Paul O'Connell has a good feeling about Ireland's prospects in Paris.
We need a bonus point, but we also need to score a lot of points to beat this French team. So I think we're capable of opening them up as well. And I think they'll offer us a few little presents as well, like they do, and opportunities to open them up. But I've a good feeling about this weekend. I think Ireland are in a good place heading into the game.
Well, if Paulie thinks so, I think we're going to stick with that. North of London welcomes the town. Conan Byrne is with us to preview Dundalk away to Arsenal.
It's quite obvious that there is like an heavyweight boxer against a super lightweight, right? We will just need to try to make them run uncomfortable a little bit. Let's make the passion something maybe bigger in our side.
Come on, the Lily White genie. I'm summoning over myself. Plus, we've an epic weekend in the Ulster football and Leinster hurling to preview with Philip Jordan, Eamon McGee and Ryan O'Dwyer.
Game on 2FM.
Now you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM if you want to get in touch. Now we're going to start with some drama because, Donica, you know my favourite thing about sport is drama. The more drama, the better. And there was plenty of it today in the Vuelta. Stage 9 drama. Sam Bennett was first across the line. Great celebration in the sprint finish at the Vuelta. But there was a lot to happen afterwards. First of all, let's hear how his finish played out.
If you've got what it takes, it's time to go. And Ackerman hits out, and so does Sam Bennett. Phelpson also within the frame. It's going to be a four-up, finishes one at the line. Oh, it's all about me, says Sam Bennett. And you know what? It's hard to argue.
It was a long final. Slightly uphill, headwind. But we had to come from behind with speed. And it was a big fight. We had some guys nearly put us in the barriers trying to take the wheel, which it was a bit sketchy, but we stayed upright, and I'm really proud of this one because I think it's my 50th career win and the team's 100th Grand Tour stage win. So it was a nice one to get.
It was a nice one to get, but unfortunately he didn't get to keep it. Well, as it stands, he didn't get to keep it. La Vuelta organisers relegated Bennett for dangerous cycling and Pascal Ackermann of Bora Hansgrove was retrospectively awarded the win. And according to Eurosport, from helicopter footage of the sprinters in the final kilometre, it appeared that Bennett either leaned or shoulder barges into another rider, and it doesn't stop there. Bennett's team Quickstep then tweeted and they said that a rider tried to barge into Sam Bennett and his teammates and he was just defending his position. As of yet, though, Bennett and his team have not appealed.
Yeah, we need a few cycling experts here out there to help us out. 51552. Marie, I'm disappointed with it, to be honest. I don't think cycling is a non-contact sport. When they go for those sprint finish, you see how much they lean into each other. I was a little bit worried when you watch the footage back. The helicopter footage is from maybe 20 seconds down the way, so they're trying to find their what they call their trains to bring them in. And Sam is, for me, finding his position. Look, Ruby be a good person to talk about it because they know what it takes to kind of finish in a sprint, and we'll be chatting to him with Paul O'Connell later on and maybe he can shed some light on it. But for me, it was disappointing, especially because look, he's the green jersey from the Tour de France, and between himself and Dan Martin we would have won 3 stages of the 9 stages of this Grand Tour in Spain. Like we're dominating it.
I think our expectations have just risen now, you know. We're nearly, when the show starts, we're just getting used to talking about stage wins. It's just becoming normal, which is absolutely brilliant. Now, staying on the theme of drama, because we're hoping that there is going to be some drama tonight when Dundalk play Arsenal at the Emirates, and it's hopefully be drama for all the right reasons, that maybe Dundalk can pull off some big shock. Well, we do have a Europa League expert on the line. Conan Byrne is going to tell us what he thinks. You always get it right, Conan.
You do.
Yeah, I've got it right the last couple of weeks, Marie. Yeah. I don't know about this one. It could be a cricket score, but hopefully not.
Go on, tell us, why do you think that?
Look, it's like Europe still isn't a guarantee for Dundalk next year. And in my opinion, I think the game against Pat the weekend is more important than tonight's tie with Arsenal, being totally honest. If they fail to make Europe,
they miss out on a guaranteed prize money of €220,000 by entering the Europa League. And just to put that into context, if they win the league in the domestic league in Ireland, they only receive €110,000. So it's crucial that they don't miss out on that windfall. So I'd nearly say that Sunday is more important than tonight against Arsenal. Having said that, though... Yeah, go on, Donegan.
That's so interesting, though, isn't it? Because, like, and you don't want to think that way when it comes to success, but you must, you know, we've seen what happened with Cork City. You must protect the club. You must look after the finances.
Oh, 100%. Like, Cork didn't make Europe last year, and look what happened to them. They got relegated due to budget cuts and not bringing in the right type of player into their club. And it can easily happen. The slippery slope has happened to most League of Ireland clubs over the last decade. Or decade, 20 years. You saw Bowes back in 2008, 2009 dominating the domestic game, and they've only took them 10 years to recover. So it's really, really important that Dundalk don't miss out on Europe this year. And yes, it's a glamour tie. It's a fantastic opportunity this evening to play in the Emirates Stadium and against top-class international football players. But at the same time, I'm sure Filippo Givagnoli is going to have one eye on Sunday.
So what's the mindset of the players now going into this? We saw Michael Duffy being interviewed over there and how excited he was because he's an Arsenal fan and he'd Thierry as his confirmation name. And look, Givagnoli sounds excited too. But when you're going into a game like that and you know the eyes of the country are going to be on you, what's the mindset like?
The mindset is just going to be all about enjoyment, Marie. I think that's what I've taken from speaking to a couple of Dundalk players over the last week. They're going to have to be defensively strong up against, I think, Eddie Nketiah will start up front for Arsenal. Having said that, though, Mikel Arteta has mentioned during the week that his strikers are out of form and in front of goal, and they will need to. He might use this as an opportunity for his strikers to try and get some goals. So who knows if whether Aubameyang or Lacazette will start tonight as well. So it's going to be very interesting. But as I said, they're going to have to be defensively strong. Brian Gartland, Andy Boyle, Dan Cleary, they're all very, very experienced players, along with Sean Gannon and Gary Rogers in goal. Darragh Leahy at left back. It's his first taste of European football this year, but he hasn't put a foot wrong so far. He's been absolutely outstanding. His fitness and his work rate has been top notch. So I really do think Chris Shields is going to have a very, very important role tonight, sitting in front of the back four, protecting them and also trying to break up play.
Conan, just on it there, you mentioned Mikel Arteta saying that his strikers aren't in great form at the moment, but his defensive system at the moment, he's down an awful lot of numbers as well.
He is down an awful lot of numbers. Like, they made five changes from the team that played Rapid Vienna and Leicester. I think he will start. I think he will play a couple of fringe players tonight against Dundalk in the hope of bringing some of those back to full fitness. He signed Thomas Partey and he's getting them up to speed and fitness by playing him in the last three games since he signed. Obviously, David Luiz is out, so I'm guessing Mustafi is going to... He's only played 41 minutes of football this season. He may play, but they have internationals all over the pitch. And even Arsenal have an Irish angle themselves on this. Jordan McAniff is in the matchday squad. He's a Derry-born 19-year-old. He is actually the younger brother of Shamrock Rovers player Aaron McAniff, who became league champion at the weekend. So, funnily enough, Aaron was actually with a North London rival, Spurs, but he didn't make a first team appearance. So Jordan is hoping to go one better than his older brother tonight. He might get a couple of minutes later on.
Right, well, we'll be definitely keeping an eye on him as well. So look, I think it would be great if even someone could go out there and score at the Emirates, because those moments, as you know, when you score on the European stage, Conan, they're pretty special, and it would be nice to do it in a glamorous tie like that. Do they have anyone capable of doing that?
This season it's not looking great, Marie, in terms of the strikers. Anyway, Pat Hoob and Michael Duffy, Stefan Kolovic, they've all played five games in Europe and they're still waiting for their first goal, and that's their three attacking players. Obviously, Sean Murray scored his third headed goal in Europe. He's only scored three headed goals in his entire career, and they've all come in the last three games in Europe. And he's going to have to be on song, and his timing of his runs into the box have been absolutely outstanding. But with Dani Ceballos probably in front of the back four tonight for Arsenal, protecting that, he might find opportunities and space limited. John Mountain played his best game for Dundalk last week against Molde. I thought he was brilliant. He set up the goal for Sean Murray as well. So he's going to be, I reckon he's going to play on the right side of midfield. And it's going to be a very, very tough ask for him up against possibly Kieran Tierney, the Scottish international left back. So goals are going to be hard to come by. I think maybe the best chance of them is from set pieces, with the likes of Brian Gartland and Dan Cleary possibly coming up from the back. And Pat Hooban in around the 6 yard box as well. So that's what I reckon anyway.
We got to get you to call it, Conan. You've called it right all the time. What would be your prediction?
Unfortunately, Dunic, I'm going to have to say Arsenal to win by three or more goals. I'd probably say 4-0 Arsenal tonight.
Okay. Conan, thanks so much for joining us. Quick break and we're back chatting Gaelic football and a massive weekend in Ulster.
With Green Farm. Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farm on-the-go chicken bites. 100% natural and packed with protein. Game on. GAA.
Now, welcome back. I have to say that it really does feel like this serious stuff is coming down the track this weekend in Championship, particularly in Ulster. And I'm delighted to say that Philip Jordan and Eamon McGee join us now to look ahead. Eamon, I'm going to start with you first. I think it's fair to say that it is a Championship like no other. And it's going to be very evident when we're watching Ulster football at the weekend because it's usually hostile. It's pretty edgy. There can be some niggle in it. But with no crowds, do you think we're going to lose that element of Ulster football?
Yeah. I think, you know, there's an element of theatre in the whole thing. You know, if Philip will remember, if I used to push him, he'd have to push me back and get the crowd would get going a wee bit. I think that fuels that whole kind of in-your-face wee bit of the toxic atmosphere that can develop in the Donegal-Tyrone game. So possibly we could lose a wee bit of the edge now, but there'll still be more than enough to make it very interesting.
Yeah, I think there'll be definitely plenty to make up for it. And I think we might as well start with Tyrone and Donegal because that is the big one. And just for you, Philip, we've been looking at Conor McKenna and talking about him since he came back. And it's pretty amazing to see him become the fulcrum of the attack in just two games. He scored or assisted 5-10 out of 5-27, scoring 3-4 in two games. It's fair to say, I think, that he's exceeded all expectations.
Yeah, definitely so. I think there was maybe a small element of debate in Tyrone should be brought into the panel at this stage of the year with not having played Gaelic football basically in 5 or 6 years. But and I suppose my own personal point of view would have been, look, get him in, get him a bit of experience, get him used to the training, and then hopefully for next year he's fit to hit the ground running. But I have to say, to be honest, maybe it's a great job Mickey's in charge because he's seen what Conor could do so quickly. And we've seen players in the past go out and play all the rules and come back and just never get the same levels again. And the likes of Tommy Walsh, who left as a top Gaelic footballer playing at All-Ireland senior level and then going out to Australia and then really struggling when he comes back. So to see what Conor's done has been pretty amazing, to be honest, so far. Now, to come out in the two tough league games against two good teams and produce the sort of displays that he's produced has been, I suppose, it's a great fillip for Tyrone, certainly, especially with the loss of Cathal McShane this year. So I suppose the real telltale will be come the weekend when he plays in a Championship match, what he can produce the goods. But certainly what he's done so far has been a huge, huge boost for the county.
I heard Colm Kavanagh say he was playing a lot of Gaelic football behind the scenes. I'm not really sure what that means, but he looks like he's been playing it anyway. But the big question, Eamon, is where do you play him? Inside? Do you play him centre forward? Do you rotate him between the two? What do you think?
For me, you know, I think he's going to be that link man, and he's going to do spells inside, you know, just to throw things up in the air for Donegal, because, you know, Neil obviously likes to stay in around the edge of the square and he'd be comfortable with McKenna in and around there. But as McKenna goes out the field, you know, that's where Neil starts to lose that wee bit of comfortability. And we'll see him in and out. You know, if we're watching the Mayo game, we heard Devlin shout, you know, get people out of that space for them to hit the ball in the McKenna, just for that link man pass. And that's what we're going to see a lot of on Sunday, you know.
Conor, Philip, how much of a loss will Conor McShay be?
Yeah, I think it's a huge loss. I think just as we're talking there, but where does Conor McKenna play? Does he play inside? Does he play out in the half forward line? I think if I've got Cathal McShane in the full forward line, that opens up a lot more options for Tyrone. So I think Tyrone is sort of forced to play Conor inside quite a bit because they need that focal point of the attack. And obviously what Cathal was probably one of the best, certainly was one of the best forwards in the country last year. So those two combined would cause huge problems to any team, and I think it would certainly put Tyrone up. It'd maybe struggle, I suppose the teams I was playing on, we were very fortunate. We had three or four top forwards that could win a game on their own, and I think it's probably the one thing that Tyrone teams have been missing over the past 10 years has been those. We've had Cathal, who's produced fantastic football, but never had that two or three players in the forward line who could win a match on their own, and that's probably where we feel the loss of Cathal. If if Conor's tied down, then who in the Tyrone team is going to step up and get the scores that we've seen? Very, very high scoring games so far during the league, and I do feel just because of the nature of this season that's going to continue. And the question is, if Conor's tied down, what can Tyrone get enough scores to win the matches against the best teams?
And another part of his game as well, Conor McKenna's game, is that he can be a target for kickouts. When you look at how they struggled 2 weeks ago, only winning 10 out of 19, and then against Mayo, they targeted McKenna, 11 kickouts and won 10. So you would think that this potentially could encourage McKenna to be positioned around centre-forward.
Yeah, certainly. Look, I think the midfield area is probably where, when you look at the game this weekend, you see Donegal certainly have an edge in that area. Obviously, Colin Calvin is missing for Tyrone now, and Park Hamsey's played in around the middle as well, so there's a few options that have gone for Tyrone, and it's something that they've not necessarily been particularly strong over the years as well, so losing those couple of players is going to be an issue for them. Donegal are particularly strong around the middle with Michael Murphy, and certainly winning possession is important. When you look back to the league game 2 weeks ago, I think Donegal put the pressure on the Tyrone kick-out and they really struggled to win possession, and it was those turnovers and those kick-outs that probably was the difference between the two teams. And Tyrone don't necessarily push up in opposition kickouts either and sort of concede possession most of the time. So I think Tyrone's going to have to certainly win 50% possession to really have a realistic chance at the weekend. And that's probably why we're going to have to see Conor both inside and outside. That, as I said, we could do a two or three Conors if we could find a few of them. Maybe.
You do have Darragh Canavan as well. Do you think, I suppose, aiming for you really, like you know what those backs are like in Donegal. For someone like Darragh Canavan, who's only really starting out his inter-county career, you know what Neil is capable, and also McMenamin. Do you think that they should start Canavan?
You know, I think a case can be made. If I was Mickey Hart or something, I would be saying to hold him back a wee bit. And on the other side, I'd also be saying with Donegal that a case can be made to hold, you know, there's doubts over McBrearty, to hold McBrearty back. And because if Tyrone are struggling, or if Donegal are struggling, they need that lift from the bench. And we've seen what Canavan can do against Mayo there, that he can provide that lift. If things open up, things get a wee bit looser, then he's the perfect man to come in and get that score, get that goal that Tyrone will need.
Okay, well, there are some other absolutely massive games as well, although we could talk about Donegal Tyrone all day. But Monaghan Cavan is another absolutely massive one, Philip. It's actually hard to think that so many teams are going to be gone out of Championship by this weekend, but they really are. And when you look at Cavan, and it seems to be going into this game, the big issue for them is that they're coming in off the losses to Kildare and a weakened Roscommon team. And, you know, it's hard to have momentum after that, especially when you're going up against your big rivals, Monaghan.
Certainly, I think that's probably one of the key aspects coming in here, because teams have such little preparation. They have two league games, and as you say, with two defeats, it's very difficult with a week's preparation to try and get the players mentally ready for it. I suppose the advantage for Mickey Graham is that he's playing Monaghan, and you couldn't ask for anything more than that local rivalry that the two teams have. But I think you look at, this is the side of it all, I suppose, where everybody opens the so-called big three of Tyrone, Donegal and Monaghan, and one of those three is always going to be on the side of the draw on their own generally. And Monaghan, I suppose, when they've seen the draw coming out from saying, look, this is the opportunity again to get to an Ulster final. And they've probably been in this position before times as well, Monaghan, but yet they've failed as well. And Calvin and Ian have been a team that have caused them problems. And I still think that when you look at the two teams, certainly Monaghan you'd have to say, are a very strong favourite. And it'd be surprising to see if Calvin could cause an upset at the weekend.
I mean, they might be very strong favourites, but they do have a major reliance on Conor McManus. And even if you're just to look at the last few games, 1-8 from play in two games, he only came on at half time against Kerry and the rest of the team with 1-9. And even if you break it down, 47% of Monaghan's scores in two games came from him. While if you look at Kerry, someone like Clifford has less than 26%. So it's massive scoring is coming from McManus. And if he is shackled, then what do they do?
That's the question we've asked about Monaghan. That's probably why they've never really got into that top tier with the likes of Dublin and Kerry. And I think it's still going to be a problem for them, but I don't think Calvin are going to, you know, be able to shackle Conor McManus. Calvin, as you said, have lost all that momentum. You know, instead of pushing off an Ulster final appearance last year, and there's positive signs with Mickey Graham, They frustrate me, Kevin, because there's so much talent and they just don't bring it. They're not showing us enough for it. And, you know, I think with this game that if Monaghan get a lead at all, that Kevin will just fold, and you could possibly see 6-7 point defeat for them.
It's hard for them because when you think about the Cavan team, they don't really have any real go-to man, Philip. They, against Roscommon, 10 different scorers, but there's no kind of one key player that they need to get the ball to even try and get that big lead and go ahead.
That's it. I think that's, I suppose the game has changed certainly a long time from my own playing. Eamon's played a bit more recently myself, but I suppose now when the games are so tight and there's so many defenders around, it's getting those forwards that can get those points. Like the likes of Conor McManus is gold dust in the GAA. If you have someone like that that you can rely on to get 6, 7, 8 points a game, those are the players that win games. And I think when the pressure really comes on at key moments in matches, you always look to your big name forward, you try and get them the ball. Donegal will try and get to Michael Murphy. Tyrone now will be looking for Conor McKenna. Dublin, well, maybe they're in the fortune position where they've got so many good forwards, but most teams are looking for that one forward they can give a ball to when the pressure's really on and they can count on them getting the score. And that's something that Cavan don't have, and as Eamon said, I think that's why they're probably going to struggle this weekend. They'll go behind, and when you don't have those top players inside, then that's when you need to really play the game from the front, and that's, you sort of set out to defend the lead rather than trying to come back and overtake a team. And that's, I think, why I can see a comfortable Monaghan victory at the weekend.
Derry Armagh is a quite intriguing one as well. Although Armagh are probably favourites, when you do kind of break down and look at this Derry team, they do have a lot of quality players. You've got McGuigan, Lachlan and Conor Glass coming back as well, Eamon, just really strengthening the setup they have there.
Yeah, I think Conor Glass I've been chatting with a few Derry men during the week, and Conor Glass has definitely added to it. And, you know, it's another player that probably is going to push on rather than struggle now that he's home. And interestingly enough, you know, when you look at Rory Gallagher's stats for winning the first round of the championship, he's only lost one since he's been working with us and working with Fermanagh, and Kieran McGeaney's only won one game. So from that side of it, from the manager's perspective, it's going to be interesting now. But, you know, you'd have to give it to Armagh because they're, you know, they have that momentum, as Philip alluded to there. That's what it's all about at this stage of the kind of with the short championship.
In a game like that, you'd be kind of nearly keeping an eye on the line as well when you have two managers like that who are fascinating characters themselves as well.
Yeah. Especially, I know all about Rory. Like, you would nearly put a camera on him just to, to watch him for the game and how animated he gets. And probably, you know, McGeaney's a big personality too. Like, so, it'll definitely be interesting from that perspective. But people say that the Tyrone and Donegal is a big game, and it is. But this is going to be equally as interesting. You know, I think the Monaghan-Cavan game will be one-sided in Monaghan. But if there's going to be a shock here in this weekend, hopefully it'll be Donegal will beat Tyrone, and hopefully the shock will be that Derry will spring it on Armagh.
It's great that it's one of those championships where you don't know what's going to happen, and there's plenty of angles. But you have to say, when it does come to Armagh, if you look at what McGeaney has done, he does seem to have strengthened the team this year. And when you look at the O'Neill brothers, they seem to be a great addition, just the space that they're able to create for everyone around them, Philip.
Yeah, I think that's credit to Kieran McGeaney. Probably, I suppose he's under a certain element of pressure coming into Armagh, but sometimes we haven't maybe seen the results of that, but when you watch Armagh playing, you can see the growth in the team. And I think their forward line is certainly their strength. That's where the strength of that team is. They're always putting up good scores. It's probably in the defensive side where they've struggled, which I suppose when you have someone like Kieran, you'd expect it nearly to be the opposite, that they would be strong defensively, and they could tend to concede a lot of free kicks. And that's something they really have to focus on. Discipline has been something that they've really struggled with. And there's just a wee doubt that I have in my head in terms of Armagh is that when it's come to games when they're expected to win, that are really important games, they've had a lot of times when they need to win games when they were favourites to get promoted up from Division 3 up to Division 2. And again, Division 2 against this year when they played Roscommon was a game where really they should have won that game comfortably and been promoted by a game to spare. They seem to have struggled in those matches a little, and whether that's a mental side of the thing, I'm not quite sure, but I think that's this Armagh team needs to win a game when they're expected to win. And again, what a prize to have to go and play Donegal and Tyrone. I think Armagh's maybe the one team that can come out of the pack a bit to challenge for an Ulster title. And again, this is an important game when you're playing like a team like Derry, who you're expected to win and probably be strong favourites for. This is a game where they have to stand up at the end and be counted and show that they're capable of taking that next step to challenge for Ulster titles.
Absolutely. Well, I think everyone is going to be planted on the couch for the weekend. Eamon and Philip, thanks so much for joining us. Enjoy it. I'm sure there'll be some fascinating battles over the weekend. We'll talk to you soon. Now, there is hurling as well. I'm using the word massive because it is massive all the time. Massive. I don't think we've seen a lineup quite like this weekend when it comes to hurling. Munster hurling semi-finals and Leinster semi-finals as well. Ryan O'Dwyer is with us. Ryan, we're going to go to the Leinster hurling semi-finals because there's so much to talk about. We actually wouldn't get it done in one sitting, so we're just going to focus on Leinster, and we're going to start with Kilkenny and Dublin, because that one is quite an intriguing one. And I think when you look at Dublin coming in as with players in form, but we don't know anything about Kilkenny because we haven't seen them. It's one of those ones where you just expect Kilkenny to come out all guns blazing, but who knows, Ryan?
Yeah, hi Marie, how are things? Yeah, it's going to be a strange weekend. The fact that the four semi-finals are all the same weekend, it's mad. You feel a little bit spoiled looking ahead to it. But there certainly is some questions to be asked. Like you referred there to the Dublin-Kilkenny game. Dublin had a game last weekend, but you have to ask the question, were they really tested? Leitrim missed. I know it was hyped up before the game that, you know, this is retaliation for the defeat that Leitrim inflicted on Dublin last year. But I think we've seen over the last couple of months that everything has happened that has happened in the past, I think, goes out the window with everything that has happened in society. Because leading into this championship, there's no such thing as form, there's no such thing as building momentum through a league or anything like that, because it's been so long since anyone has been together for a game. Dublin, I don't think they were tested last week against Leash. I think from the very start of the game, it was a real open game. There was no physical contact, there was no hard hitting. The intensity wasn't there. No, I don't think that was Dublin's fault. I think with Leash missing so many players, Dublin didn't need to lift their game. But I think that they're going to have to this week. It's against Kilkenny. You play a bad Kilkenny team and you still have to play at your best to beat them. I've used this comment before, you never have Kilkenny bet until you're on the bus on the way home. They're just that type of team that just, they're in your face.
They let you out of Nolan Park at all.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing that it's in Dublin. It's going to be a strange game. Every game that's been played now, no crowd, is going to be a strange game, but I think that being Kilkenny's first time out in COVID era, it'll be the first time they'll be playing without a crowd in the stands, without the crowd egging the referee on to make decisions or not make decisions. And I suppose that can be said for both teams, but there's a lot of questions to be asked on both teams. Dublin were They were lucky to get a game last week, is to blow a few of the cobwebs off, to get a run out in the legs. Like, you can train all you want, but it's a championship match that where really you show your fitness, you show your hurling. That's where it matters. But like I said already, have they been tested last week? I suppose you look at Kilk, and look, I suppose if you do look at Dublin, there's still a lot of questions to be asked with Dublin. Like, what way are they going to match up? They have decisions to make on a few players. Trawler, Eamon Dillon didn't start last week. Liam Rush didn't start. Shane Barrett didn't start. There's going to be questions asked about them. Keeney, you could say, there's going to be questions asked about them. Do they come into it? Do you spring them off the bench? Question asked about Crummy. Like, yeah, he was phenomenal up in the forwards, but if you ask my opinion, he's still one of the best wing backs in the country. So it's kind of a case of robbing Peter to pay a pause.
Well, Ryan, if we think there's questions going to be asked about Dublin, I think there's going to be a huge amount of questions asked about Galway and Wexford, because again, talk about unknown quantities, the two of them.
Yeah, and the thing is, neither of them have had a game to prepare for this. Like, if you look at the betting, I just looked at the odds there earlier on, just to see who was favourites. I thought Wexford would be favourites, but actually Galway are 8-11, Wexford are 6-4. And I don't know where that's coming from, to be honest. I suppose neither team have had a good build up to it. Like, Shane O'Neill, a new manager coming into Dublin. Now, I'm sure he's aware of the Galway setup and he's getting ready, but like, to prepare your players, you really need to build up momentum. You need everything to go right when you're coming in at the start. but that was just disrupted. Do you know? So there's a, for me anyway, there's an awful lot of unknowns with Galway. What way are they going to play? What play? What's their style of play? Now we are we're well aware of their players because they've quality players. And if you look at their team over the last few years, there haven't been many additions to it. But there still is a lot of unknowns as regards Wexford. They've been hit with the COVID virus. Like there's two players that can't train with them, and a lot of players had to isolate because of that. So does that affect their focus? Does it affect their preparation? Like this is Davey's fourth year. I think it was October 2016 he took over. So this is fourth season, and he knows all his players. So I think the break with COVID won't affect Wexford as much as it will affect Galway. But as regards the Galway Wexford one, I would say Wexford would shade it. I know the Benton isn't saying that, but I'd say Wexford will shade it. But you just never know. And I think because there has been such a big break, I think the first few minutes of all of these games is so vital, because if you can make a good start, you're sowing that seed in the opposition's head, and there's the chance of that growing then, you know. So I certainly think that the start of both of these games are going to be vital. The start of the four games, if you look at the four games over the weekend, is going to be vital.
The start of every single championship game, I think, this weekend is going to be vital. Ryan O'Dwyer, thanks so much for joining us. We don't have a huge amount of time for Gaelic games now because we have a big Paul O'Connell interview coming up, but we will be continuing our preview of the weekend's action tomorrow. So tune in for that. We're going to take a quick break now, and then we're back with Donegal's former teammate, Paul O'Connell.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Green Fern's new on-the-go chicken bites are natural, high in protein, and packed with flavour.
Game on 2FM.
Okay, earlier we got the band back together. That's a nice way of saying we roped in Ruby Walsh as we caught up with Vodafone ambassador Paul O'Connell, who is launching the new British and Irish Lions 2021 app.
Game on rugby.
Paul, how are you?
I'm very well, Donica, and you?
I'm great. Paulie, I think we would all agree we would be glad to see the back of 2020, but the Lions in South Africa in 2021 is always special, isn't it?
Yeah, listen, the South African Lions tour is always a big thing, and that's the one-liner, I suppose, Ian McGeachan used in his famous speech that time. The Lions in South Africa is special. I suppose going back to the 1974 tour when Willie John's team went unbeaten, and then the 1997 team where the Living With Lions video was recorded and came out, where they won that tour as well. And we had a pretty good tour in 2009. We didn't win it, obviously, but it was a great tour. So I think the Lions in South Africa are special, and they're great tours. South African people embrace them, enjoy it. South African players love being part of it, so it should be a great trip. It should be a great tour.
Robbie is back, and we have been watching it for the last few weeks. Have you noticed anyone sticking their hand up for selection?
Get off the fence now, whatever you want to.
You always get asked, who's your bolter? I suppose Dan Levy could be the Lions' bolter. It was amazing to see him back after 19 months. I genuinely didn't think he'd make it back playing rugby when I heard about his injury and what was contained in it, especially after you saw what happened to David Wallace with his injury that time, a very similar injury, I would imagine. So after 19 months to come back and play him, and I watched him against Zebra, and now Zebra weren't any great shakes. It was probably a great game to make a comeback in, but I was watching him getting off the ground to see if there was any ill effects. There never was. He said afterwards he felt great, and he looked great. You know, a lot of players are very good at certain things. Are good over the ball at the ruck, or they're good chop tacklers, or they're good line out operators, whatever it is. But I think he seems to have it all, you know, ball carry, poach at the breakdown, catch pass, tackle, reads the game well. So it would be amazing. It would be an amazing comeback story if he found full fitness now over the next few months, managed to play a few games for Ireland, and managed to get on the tour.
Paul, for players, everybody wants to be a Lion. You've dipped your foot into coaching a little bit. We've seen you in different consulting roles. When you're a coach or potentially a coach, is going on a Lions tour as a coach something that you would like to do?
It isn't something I'd like to do, certainly now, certainly not on this tour. I think it's great. It's probably a great thing to do for international coaches because, you know, when you're international coaching, you probably have 13 games in a season. And while you probably don't want to be in a club where you might have 40 games in a season, you don't get a chance to take a breath. You don't get a chance to look around and see what other teams are doing. 13 games is probably a little bit short. So to be able to go on a Lions tour, to have a game every Saturday, every Wednesday, to be working with a mixture of different coaches that you may not have worked with before, that you've probably coached against, you learn a lot and it probably refreshes you quite a lot. I mean, so I think for Andy Farrell to have gone in it in the last few years has probably been great for him, and it's probably been great for Warren Gatland to watch Andy Farrell in action as well and learn what he does and how he plans. You know, I think the line-out will be really important on the tour, so you'd love to see Steve Borthwick going on it again, but I think with him coaching in Leicester and having 40 games in a season, I can't see him wanting to go on a Lions tour. So the coaching aspect of it is really interesting. I mean, they generally end the tour absolutely broken men because they have a game every Saturday and every Wednesday, and they just do not stop working for all the tour. Now, I think that it's a very fulfilling, very enjoyable experience for a lot of them, but it is very difficult.
Paul, how does the delegation work on a Lions tour? How do you get players to bond? Who takes what? How do you decide? One person can't do it all, so there must be a huge delegation.
Yeah, well, I think, in my experience, Warren Gatland got it very right in 2009. We played, Sir Ian McGeoghan was head coach, but Warren Gatland was kind of the head coach as well, and we played the Welsh game plan, which I said before, for Welsh players has to be very, very simple to learn. And you can learn that. We learned that Welsh game plan literally in one training session, one day. And we kind of had alignment straight away in how we were going to go and play. Sean Edwards was the defence coach. Defence is a very complicated thing, but he's able to make it very simple. He's able to give very simple messages to the players. So we had a very simple game plan that we learned early. On top of having this simple game plan, you had a few Welsh players, obviously, in that group that would have been playing it for a long time that were able to coach it while we were playing it. You know, a lot of Wasps players that had played it under Warren Gatland and Sir Ian McGeoghan as well in Wasps. So you had all these on-field coaches as well. And that's the biggest thing you need to do, I think, is to have a simple game plan that everyone can learn really quickly, get on the same page really quickly. Then the players can start taking ownership and start, I suppose, coaching themselves and running it themselves. And in fairness, Warren Gatland has been very good at doing that. He understands coaching, but he understands players as well. And he's able to make his coaches keep it simple. I remember preparing something with Graham Rowntree on that 2009 tour. I think we'd about 11 clips that me and him had decided that he was going to show. And I remember he went up and he showed it, and he only showed 3 clips. And afterwards I said, "You have to leave out a load of the detail." He said, "Gats came up to me before the meeting and told me I was only allowed to show 3 clips. He said, the Welsh boys won't be able to take in the information." And, you know, I learned a lot in that tour. Even I remember other things we were trying to do in the lineouts. I remember Gats came up to me one day, Warren Gatland, and he said, "Listen," he said, "the Welsh boys just want to play physically. The simpler you can make the lineouts for them so that they're not worried about them, so it's not occupying their brain space, the better it is for them." And the fact is, that's true for all players. If you have to think a lot when you're on the field, if the actions aren't automated, you'll struggle. And so I think he's very good at managing that for players. He's very good at keeping things simple. He's very good at making sure that his coaches don't overcomplicate things. And that's where the kind of alignment comes that you're asking about, Ruby. And as I said, I just think Warren Gatland is very good at managing that, and it makes him a very good Lions coach, and it's why they keep going back to him time and time again.
So then how do egos work? So you pick the best from England, Scotland, Wales and Ireland, who are ultimately the best players and probably all leaders in their own countries, and put them all into the one squad. How do they manage egos that you're going to listen to, or whoever the two second rows are now, who are consider themselves equal to each other, but one then has to listen to the other? How do they manage the egos of all this?
They don't overly manage it, I would say. I'd say the players manage it a little bit. you know, they, in fairness to Sir Ian McGeachan, I might start calling him Ian McGeachan now. Ian McGeachan is very good as I suppose, telling stories about previous Lions tours. So, you know, he's generally present jerseys, or he's brought in to meet the squad at some stage, or in 2009 he was the head coach. He just, you know, he's a brilliant storyteller. He's a great accent. He tells the story about Jason Leonard getting picked for the 1997 Lions tour. He was first choice prop. He didn't play one of the test matches, and he, you know, he tells the story of how he spent the whole tour preparing Tom Smith and Paul Wallace to play an unbelievable role in helping them dominate the South African scrum and hence win the test series. So you know, there's other stories around, I think in the 1997 tour as well, they brought in a thing where it was down to the player that wasn't picked to go to the player that was picked, congratulate him, pat him on the back, and let him know he'd do whatever he could to help him. So you've got these kind of little traditions that are there in the Lions, or parts of the Lions culture that gets carried on from tour to tour, whereby I suppose you have to try and manage to park your ego, and they haven't always managed to do that. You know, I think in the 2001 tour in Australia, a lot of guys were disgruntled about the coaching, about the selection, and they used to use the media to voice that whenever they could. And that's when the tours unravel, and that has happened before. But I think in the modern era, Gatland again is quite good at managing that and keeping players in check.
Paul, just given where we are now, next summer does feel like a really long time away. And when you think about Philip Brown's comments recently, and just the stark warning that is issued if things continue as they are without fans going to games, how worried are you about about professional rugby?
I think professional rugby will remain. There's no doubt about it. But it's just in what guise it will remain. And I think a lot of the strides we've maybe made in terms of professionalism is probably going to be reduced. I think, you know, I heard Eddie Jones saying there's probably going to be a lot more generalist coaches now. We have an expert for everything these days. There's a coach for the breakdown, there's a coach for defence, there's a coach for attack, there's a coach for the scrum, there's a coach for the line-out, there's a kicking coach. There's probably going to be, you know, a lot of coaches are going to be able to have to throw their hand at everything. Same for strength and conditioning guys, and probably the same for players. Squads are going to get smaller, so your players like, you know, Elliot Daly, I would be thinking of guys that can play three or four positions are probably going to be very important. There's a danger, I think, that a lot of academy players are going to end up playing rugby now before they're ready. Before they're physically ready, and I think that's a danger with the reduced funds that are available. But it's hard to know. I mean, we're in a very uncertain world, but I think for rugby to survive, we need to get crowds back to the games. I mean, New Zealand have managed to do it. I'm not sure when we're going to be able to manage to do it. If we don't have them for the Six Nations, it's going to be very tricky, and the rugby landscape in Ireland certainly is going to change, I'm sure. And I know Leinster are quite profitable. I know Munster certainly struggled before this, so I can only imagine the situation they're in now. So it's very hard to predict what the future is going to be.
Paul, you mentioned it there, and it was very important not only for the finances of Irish rugby to get the Six Nations back up and running, but just to watch games again. And the Italian match was great. We go into this Saturday against France with our destiny in our own hands. 5-pointer in France, do you fancy it?
I do fancy it, actually. You know, I yesterday I watched the Wales versus France game, and France should have had another red card. Bernard Leroux, congratulations, even has just put out a tweet there saying our exemplary player has no charge to answer. So you'd think they'd have learned a lesson from the World Cup match, but they didn't. They always got a red card in the Scottish game, and you'd think they'd have learned their lesson. I mean, you want to be physical, sure, but you just can't do that anymore in rugby, unfortunately, probably for me and you, Dunners. But it's amazing how the penny hasn't dropped still with them in some aspects of the game. So I think they will give opportunities to Ireland. They look very, very good at the moment, France. They look very physical.
but their discipline is still quite poor. So I think they'll give us plenty of penalties. I think Ireland won't kick many kicks at goal. We'll probably, the very, very easy ones in front of the post, we'll take. Anything that's kind of difficult, we'll probably go to the corner. And if the rough, if the ruck is reffed, which it wasn't last weekend against Wales, if it's reffed hard, we should get a lot of opportunities to attack France. And I know we've never managed to score four tries there before and have a bonus point win, but I think they will give us opportunities to do it. They're definitely improving, but they still have a lot of their old bad habits in their game as well.
With Ireland, are we seeing an identifiable style under Andy Farrell, or any major changes?
Yeah, I think we're trying to play a bit more, and we probably have a better structure to play when the play becomes unstructured. I think a lot of Joe's coaching, which was amazing, was based off set-piece plays, and there was no one better in the world at him than that. But when the game became a bit chaotic, I think we struggled a little bit, and we're probably a little bit better prepared for that. But it's very hard to tell against Italy. I mean, even if you look at Zebre and all their second team, because there's so many players playing with Italy, they were so poor the other night against Leinster. And that kind of shows you where Italian and rugby are at. And I think this weekend will be very different. This weekend will be more like England, the England game we played, where you're coming up against a phenomenally physical team. I mean, they were almost out of control at the breakdown area at the weekend. So they go hard after the ball at the breakdown, and that'll be Sean Edwards' coaching, trying to make sure that they get the job done at the breakdown to allow them to defend when the ball does come at the ruck. But it's going to be a really physical game at the weekend, and at times in the past, in the recent past, we've struggled against those big physical sides.
But Paul, when you look at the few tries we coughed up against Italy, and then you look at what France did against Wales, attacking-wise, Dupont, Antomac, Fakatawa, are you really sure we can get four and still win the match?
Yeah, it could be a bit like a Spurs under Ozzy Ardiles type of game, but I think they'll score tries. They're just that good now. They have, you know, you don't score tries by just having great attacking structures. You need magical players that can produce something a la Peter Omani did at the weekend. You know, if you look at Dupont, Entomac, Fiku, Vakatawa, they really do have magical players that can produce something out of nothing, France. And they've kind of backboned that with some good structures around how they play and good structures around how they get out of their own half. So I think they'll definitely score. You have to accept that they're a little bit like New Zealand in terms of how they attack. They'll definitely score some tries against you. But like we did against New Zealand in 2006 in Chicago, where we went to the corner early because we felt we knew we needed to score a lot of points to beat them. I think it'll probably be the same this weekend. We need a bonus point. You also need to score a lot of points to beat this French team. You know they will open you up. No matter how good your defence is, they will catch you a few times with the quality they have. So I think we're capable of opening them up as well. And I think they'll offer us a few little presents as well, like they do, and opportunities to open them up. But we'll have to try. I mean, listen, that try at the end against Italy was very poor. And I think from a points difference point of view as well, it was disappointing for us. But I've a good feeling about this weekend. I think Ireland are in a good place heading into the game.
Paulie, you mentioned magical players. You need physical ones as well, and Keane Healy can join your special club, yourself, Rory Best, John Hayes, Brian O'Driscoll and Ron O'Gara, and hit 100 caps.
Yeah, it's amazing, you know, that he's hit that number, considering the amount of injuries he's had and the punishment his body has taken. He's been first choice nearly, you know, most of his career in a very bruising position. I roomed with him, I think, in the 2013 Lions it was, I think, when he broke his ankle. And he was in absolute ribbons, but he keeps coming back. He's a great guy, you know, and I think he's a great example for the modern rugby player that you can be yourself, you can be this quirky character. You don't need to be a robot. You can be incredibly dedicated, but you can be this quirky character as well. So I think he's a fantastic guy, and I'm delighted for him. I remember
Shane Horgan telling me about him when he was in the academy. They said you had to kick him out of the academy because he was stronger than most of the guys in their senior setup. And he's been a real linchpin for Ireland now in the last few years. He's a great player, and I hope it goes well for him at the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you've given us all hope, Paulie, calling for a five-pointer on Saturday. Thanks so much for joining us on Game On. Paulie was announcing Vodafone's sponsorship of the British and Irish Lions, and they've also announced a digital Lions where you can join the Pride. Paul, thanks a million.
Cheers. Thanks, Donica.
Game On Rugby. Oh, it was nice to catch up with your friends, Donica.
Always good. And you're right, Marie, it does give you hope for the weekend. I think it's when you're a little bit out of it and you're listening to everyone else, the kind of white noise around the place. But you know the type of individuals that are in the squad, and them saying that, Paul O'Connell saying that he thinks we could get a five-pointer, I'm on for that.
Well, we have spent a lot of time over the last while, Donica, speaking about testing for GAA players. There's a little bit of news just breaking in the last few minutes on this 6-1. The GAA from today are going to be providing optional tests from players. Let's hear from Fergal McGill. He was talking to Marty Morrissey.
The GAA from today are now employing a new optional screening programme for its intercounty players. The antigen test will only give an indication at a given point in time as to whether someone may have coronavirus or not. Antigen testing is new, quicker, but less sensitive than what the GAA have been using and will continue to use.
For the antigen test, we'll be able to do it on site with players at a training session. It is again a nasal swab. It will only take about 15 minutes for the results to come back, and at that point we'll know whether we need to refer a player on further for PCR testing or not.
That was Fergal McGill of GAHQ talking to Marty Morrissey of RTE Sports. Now, that is all we have time for. We will be back tomorrow, Donica, and we'll be doing lots more Gaelic games, and we also have the FAI Cup semi-final draw, so plenty to look forward to. Conor Behan is up next.
With Green Farm, healthy snacking made easy. With Green Farm's high protein on the go range. Available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.